Welcome. How's everybody doing today? It's the end of the con. It's Sunday. We know because we are right there with you, like without a doubt. So I'm so thankful to see you guys here. My name is, move a microphone toward my face. There we go. My name is Regina McMenemy, and I am the founder of the Geek Embassy. There we go. And this is Baskets and Capes, What Fairy Tales Can Teach Us About Superheroes. Yeah, I think there we go. There's our names. This is Isabella, and this is Dante. And we are all writers and contributors, as I said, to the Geek Embassy. I am a college professor, and I wrote my dissertation actually about girl gamers, women gamers. And this is kind of a secondary interest for me is storytelling and how we tell stories. So that's where this topic sort of evolved from. So to begin, I actually want to start by asking you guys a question. What do you know about fairy tales? And just go ahead and like shout.
They're scary.
They're scary.
They're cautionary.
They're cautionary. Oh, those are great. Yes, yes. They what?
Change.
They change. Yes,
Every
very good.
Has them.
Every culture has them. Fantastic. Good.
They often teach morality tales.
There's often a moral to the story, yes?
The hero's journey.
The hero's journey, yes, yes. What was that?
Disney changed
them. Disney, yes.
True story.
Disney changed them, made them less scary. What was that?
They're sometimes based on true events.
They are sometimes based on true events, yes, very good. They're for children?
Not always, but they evolved to be.
They are now for children, but they weren't originally for children. And that's part of one I want to talk about. Oops, you went already. Did you go forward or did I go forward?
You just went forward.
Go back one. All right. Oh, wait, no. I did that one. Okay. They teach important life skills, like how to use someone else's computer. All right, what are fairy tales? You guys really did a great job talking about like the true things about fairy tales. There's a lot of myths about fairy tales. One, probably the primary one being that they were for children. So fairy tales are a genre of storytelling distinct from myth, legend, or nursery rhyme that shares common elements. So there's a lot of things that kind of go in between these different genres, but fairy tales are separate and sort of distinct from that, from each one of those different storytelling modes. Characteristics of fairy tales, they often occur outside of a quantifiable time, an unquantifiable distant past. I was being very academic, apparently, when I put this together. Let's make the big words all together. We often hear once upon a time, to the degree that is such a trope of fairy tales, we have a whole show called Once Upon a Time. They were told as flights of fancy, so they were told as sort of fun, stories and tales, etc., that had magic, enchantments, talking animals, impossible beasts. They had lots of fantasy elements, lots of things that were fantastic by nature. And how they've changed. So yes, they have absolutely changed. Disney did a lot to change them and really modified a lot of the originals. Because if you do look back at the original fairy tales, there's a lot of violence. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of voyeurism where you're sort of like peeking in on other people's private lives. And they were, told around, fires or in salons where people were sitting and sort of trying to almost one-up each other to a degree, where that was part of the culture of where fairy tales originated from. And they only became children's literature in the 19th century. So it's only sort of more recently that they became stories that we tell children. And that was part of where the morality sort of tales came from, was sort of turning them more into morality stories about being good and being bad and how to behave, etc., how to obey your parents and all that stuff. All that sort of came in during that era. So the big question for this panel in particular was, why do we want to look at how fairy tales intersect with superheroes? And we're actually missing one panelist today. My friend Jennifer Lever is a professor at Miramar College in San Diego, and she wasn't able to make it here today for the panel. But she and I came up with this topic over drinks one Friday afternoon, because apparently what teachers do is sit around and drink and think about the ways you can talk about stuff. And it just, it resonated so much to me to think about like how we think about fairy tales and then how we've had so many superheroes that have become popular in the last, well, it's going on like 20 years now, I guess, 15 or 20 years. So it's a bigger, scarier world, far bigger and far scarier than it was when fairy tales were the stories that were being told. News travels faster, more quickly. It's everywhere. You see and hear about stories across the world that you wouldn't have heard about during the time of fairy tales. Superheroes surged into popularity after 9/11. This was a huge... this was definitely a correlation between the fright of the terrorist attacks and the popularity, the surge in popularity of superheroes. And what I love, one of the things I love about superheroes versus fairy tale characters is how modern superheroes are deeply flawed characters usually. Where when you look at Superman in the 1950s and sort of the era that he came out from, heroes were supposed to be impeccable. They were supposed to be perfect. They were supposed to be outstanding members of society that had no flaws. And we can definitely see how that's changed to the point where we've kind of dirtied up everybody now, even Superman.
Unfortunately.
That really has taken a change. So this was why I thought fairy tales became significant in terms of why we were looking at, while looking at superheroes, how we could look at them. So the themes that we're going to explore, each one of us are going to give you an example of a superhero story and how it relates to fairy tale storytelling. And these are the themes that we're going to tie back to. The unexplored worlds as metaphors for the journey of the self. I heard a lot of people mention the hero's journey, right? And that's definitely a big one in this. Your personal identification with the hero or heroine. The antagonist is dark, dangerous, sometimes an embodied power, but sometimes just an entity. There is often otherworldly assistance. You have good helpers, people who help out our heroes as they're sort of going through their transitions and as they're going on their journey. You work together and independently. That's another one of the main themes. And you always see the universal struggle between good and bad forces. And that's definitely something that we can very clearly see between our superheroes and our fairy tales. So my example, you can't really see, so I have Baby Groot and Rocket on my shirt today. So my example is Guardians of the Galaxy. And I wanted to redo this to do the most recent movie, but I was unable to get that done in time for the presentation. So this is from Volume 1 of Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie. So we look here at lost parents and step-parents. A very common theme in fairy tales was a parent that was lost, evil step-parents, et cetera, et cetera. And so we have Guardians of the Galaxy. The very first scene is Star-Lord losing his mom. And then we have Cinderella, who's a similar character, and who experienced the same kind of loss early. We have Talking and Magical Beasts. This is one of my favorite parallels between fairy tales and superheroes. And these are, of course, like I said, these guys are on my shirt for a reason. Guardians of the Galaxy, we have Pinocchio with his conscience as Jiminy Cricket. And that is a good example of sort of the embodied magical creature. We see characters in both superhero movies and in fairy tales being a positive influence upon one another, which is one of the most powerful things I thought about Guardians of the Galaxy was seeing how Gamora, and what's Star-Lord's actual name?
Peter Quill.
Yes, I'm like blanking. I didn't write my notes down.
That's why she invited me to this panel.
Yes.
You lived for that moment.
Yeah. You really did. It's like, I can't actually drop this mic, but I would if I could. So we see a very nice parallel relationship between Wendy and Peter Pan and Peter and Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy. So that positive influence, the way that they sort of help each other grow. And the idea of rescue being part of or inherent in the stories of both fairy tales and our superheroes is one that might have a little bit of controversy associated with it, because we're often kind of upset about our princesses being only about being rescued. But in some of the tales, it was, you know, Gretel, who saved Hansel. And we have Guardians of the Galaxy here as this example of rescue. So we do have some sort of complications in these themes. I won't say that this isn't flawed in some ways. But we do see that as a means of sort of bringing characters together and strengthening their bond to each other when it is a positive experience. And this is one of my favorites, and you may or may not think of The Wizard of Oz as a fairy tale, but it certainly holds true to many of the fairy tale approaches. But we have our mystical band of fighters that come together as a group and are stronger together than they are as individual fighters. So I think that was the last of mine, and I'll turn it over to Dante for...
My favorite superhero ever, and the best superhero ever. His name's Green Lantern. It's really too bad that I don't have a movie to talk about. It's really unfortunate. All right, so we'll go through with Green Lantern. You go to the next slide there.
Sure.
We're going to start with the journey through an unexplored world. Let's see. With the Little Mermaid, we get that twofold, where you, the reader, are going through an unexplored world. Pardon the pun, under the sea. And likewise, you have Ariel going through an unexplored world after she becomes human for a short period of time. Likewise, with Green Lantern, all the Green Lanterns, at least in the main comics, started on Earth, and they're recruited into this international corps of space cops known as the Green Lantern Corps. The picture that you're seeing on this slide is Oa, the home base of the Green Lantern Corps. And the entire premise of the comics, it features them zipping around through a whole bunch of unexplored worlds, basically to boldly go where they have never gone before. It's really the main theme. I mean, as much as he doesn't like to admit it, Geoff Johns likes to reference Star Trek. So next slide for me. The universal evil that must be destroyed. It's a very common trope in superhero themes. When we're looking at that particular picture, it's Red Riding Hood. We've got this universal evil. It's the big bad wolf, mostly reimagined nowadays as a sexual predator. We'll just leave it at that. Or he had a different connotation back when it was invented. It was much more that it's like, well, you know, wolves are there. They're going to go ahead and eat your livestock, and they're bad.
Yeah.
And it's evolved into a much more powerful symbol this way.
Yeah, that was one of the things that Jen would always say on this slide in particular, was to make sure to talk about how wolves were a true threat at the time fairy tales were generated, because it's really important that we see them symbolically. But when people were hearing fairy tales originally, they were afraid of wolves.
Fences were not really a thing back then.
Right.
and you have universal evils that must be destroyed among any Marvel or DC title. Really, pick one. You know, Superman's got Lex Luthor, Batman's got the Joker, Green Lantern has Sinestro, and what I really like about the modern mythos surrounding Green Lantern is that all of their light derives from an emotional spectrum. Green is related to willpower, while yellow, which is the light wielded by his main nemesis Sinestro, is the literal embodiment of fear in the Green Lantern universe. The one thing that the Green Lantern ring says to you when you're selected and chosen is that you, Hal Jordan of Earth, you have the ability to overcome great fear, which is a direct antithesis to the entire power that his enemies wield. That's why that's the reason that they retconned in why. Green Lantern doesn't like yellow. It's because he's fighting with bravery. This other man is fighting with fear. They are diametrically opposed forces. All right. All right, fantastic. Talking about Magical Beast, this is one of my favorite ones because he's one of my favorite Green Lanterns. You see this a lot through through fairy tales. I chose the Frog Prince. I mean, you could have chosen literally anybody, but you know, you've got the Frog Prince who's going to go ahead and like, oh, kiss me, I'll turn into a prince. Yeah, and Chip won't really turn into a prince. He's just kind of a squirrel the entire time. but the one thing that that blew my mind when I first started getting into Green Lantern was like, I thought that all Green Lanterns were human, and that he just kind of found the ring and was, you know, it was kind of just a superhero by himself. But no, the Green Lantern Corps spans the entire universe. It goes through a whole bunch of different sentient worlds with different sentient beings. This guy just happens to be a sentient squirrel who can talk and will probably go ahead and kick your butt. I mean, he's done it to a lot of people. Go ahead. Next slide. All right. Rescue. I want to go ahead and touch on Rescue again, just like Regina did, because it is a very important theme. Again, you'll see Rescue all the time in superhero literature. What I really liked about the Beauty and the Beast is, again, that, you know, that trope where the princess goes ahead and saves who is supposed to be, you know, the main hero of that story. You know, Beast is going through his own hero's journey, but Belle's the one who has to go ahead and save him. And that got to a very seminal and iconic story in the Green Lantern comics when Hal Jordan was basically possessed by the entity of fear, and he turned into a villain called Parallax, and he needed to be rescued. He wasn't rescued for a good 10 years real time. God knows how long it passed in comics, but it was about 10, 12 years in the comics between the time that he turned into Parallax and the time that he was rescued by the Green Lantern of the 1990s. I forget his name because he doesn't really matter. I'm sorry to any Kyle fans out there, but you know, you're entitled to your incorrect opinions.
Throw down the mic again.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
I have a lot of strong opinions. I'm from the East Coast. And we can go to the next slide. And the mystical magical team of fighters, that's one of my favorite bits of the Green Lantern story, is that he's not just this one, you know, this one headstrong guy on Earth who fights alongside Superman and Batman occasionally. He's got an entirely another set of heroes that he fights alongside with. That's the Green Lantern Corps. They're split into 3,600 different sectors with two Green Lanterns apiece. It's 7,200 people wielding the most powerful weapon in the universe. And I can tie it back to the fairy tales where you've got Sleeping Beauty and Briar Rose. It's not as big as, you know, a 7,200 strong squad of space cops, but you know, they've got three pretty awesome magical fairies who are trying to go ahead and raise Sleeping Beauty and protect her from the evil that was Maleficent. I don't even know, was she called Maleficent in the original fairy tale? I'm sure she wasn't. But.
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
I can't remember. Fairy. Does anybody know? As I don't know for sure. I'm not. Okay. She was? No, I didn't think she had a name. I think at that time that mostly the bad female characters were just unknown name-wise.
Evil Queen.
Yeah. Yep.
Fantastic. So that's Green Lantern for you.
All right.
All right. So mine is Jessica Jones. So how many of you are familiar with Jessica Jones? Hand wave is also acceptable. All right, so clearly Jessica also falls into the orphaned group. She's in a tragic car accident when she's young that gives her her powers that allows her to protect, well, unwillingly protect people. Whoops. So in some cases, orphans in fairy tales, orphans were often the, you know, kind and noble, like Cinderella and Rapunzel. They were, you know, innocent and locked away. But Jessica kind of takes another route. But she's still very protective of the people that she's close to. And, of course, the big bad in Jessica Jones is the Purple Man. What is his
name? Kilgrave.
It's been a, yeah. I'm sorry, I have to throw you a ball. So he really is the embodiment of everything that is bad. He's a predator. He uses people for his own gain. He cares, like, not at all about other people. And in often cases in fairy tales, there's often a character who is undeniably bad. Like, you can't get much worse than the witch in Hansel and Gretel, who literally eats children. And of course, there's always the positive influence. Cinderella had her fairy godmother, who helped her along. And in Jessica's case, she has, Patty.
Gosh, I haven't watched it, so I cannot help you on this.
Anybody know?
It's Patsy.
Okay.
I'm horrible with names. It's like my thing.
It's been a little while, but she's more of less than like a helper. She's pretty much Jessica's subconscious in this case, just like Jiminy Cricket.
I was just going to say she's like the Jiminy Cricket.
She literally is, because Jessica is the most unwilling superhero you can get. She does not want anything to do with anyone. She just wants to, you know, drink,
not
basically.
Not to mention the most self-destructive superhero ever.
Which is saying a lot. Self-destructive seems to be a superhero trait.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever...
Well, a modern superhero trait.
A modern superhero trait, which is definitely how they've, you know, grimied up the modern superhero. Yeah. And rescue. So... In Bluebeard, the heroine, I guess, is rescued by a prince from Bluebeard. But in Jessica Jones's case, she kind of has to make do and, you know, put together a team to rescue herself and everyone else. And this one is always kind of funny because... I just like imagining the team and Jessica Jones as the dwarves, because it's kind of funny.
And her as Snow White.
Yeah, that makes it even better.
You think about Snow White as like the embodiment of simplicity and beauty and nature and goodness, and you have a heroine who she wants to do is drink and like... ignore people.
She's the anti-Snow White.
Yes.
They even look alike. Really.
Yeah, exactly. They really do have similar.
So yeah, but she Jessica realizes that she can't really do it all on her own, because she's tried and it did not go well for her. So she, you know, recruits her also reluctant group of fighters to go after Kilgrave.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are our examples. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to give you guys a chance to ask some questions, because we really did want this to be interactive. So have you been sitting here thinking about how your favorite fairy tale and your favorite superhero might intersect? We'd love to have you come up to the microphone, ask us any questions you have about the panel and the presentation that we've done. But we'd love to know if you guys have any of these kinds of things rolling around in your head.
Or if you just want to shout out.
Yeah, you could do that.
An example, if you want.
Yep.
The microphone is far.
It is. Okay.
Okay.
Just talk. We can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, I'm very loud, so I got
good.
It.
Good.
That's great. We like that.
Yes.
So I was just wondering if you have any opinions or what you think of. There's been a trend, I know, in some of the Asian fairy tales or myths, nobody was necessarily evil. They were simply diametrically opposed.
Right, kind of what he was talking about,
yeah,
too. Yeah,
I would argue that Sinestro, like, is like they make him evil, but
yeah,
people who simply have like their goals do not mesh. They are not evil goals in and of themselves, but neither can achieve those goals
without the other.
We each have, you know, people that follow us, and we each need food. There's only enough food for one of these, so I guess we're going to have to fight, or possibly, I mean. The history of the wolves, but wolves need to eat. If there is no food, they are going to come and take your livestock. They are not necessarily evil.
Right.
But they, like, that is not good for the humans who do not want them to take the livestock.
Right.
And so the humans could be the aggressor in that sense if they come after the wolves and they're only trying to eat.
Right.
I think there's been a change in superheroes and stories recently where you do get a lot of characters who, they may do bad things, they may all be evil. Like, if you look at, like, Game of Thrones or anything like that, mm-hmm. some, like, there's not a whole lot of people in that show that are, you know, or the books that are blameless in any way.
Right.
But many of them are diametrically opposed. They cannot achieve their goals if somebody else achieves their goals.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
So I just wanted to know, like, how you fit that in or what you think of that kind of, like, trend. I don't know if it's bringing things back from, like, way in the past or from different cultures or what.
Kind of. I think it is a little bit, and if you think about, like you said, you know, is the wolves as the example of, you know, the wolves need to survive. And so there is a kind of a second side to it. And I think that that's part of, I think it kind of fits in with the trend to make heroes more complicated and to, like I said, dirty them up a little bit, which I didn't mean to be like despairing, but more, you know, to make them more complicated and to give them more of a story. So I think that that kind of fits a little bit in with that same kind of approach, which is at the same time taking from history, but putting it in our modern context, which is what storytelling should be doing. Like taking the, you know, the traditions and the things that we've done in the history and making it current. So I think that that's definitely one of the best ways that that's kind of happening. So thank you. And anybody who asks a question or has a thought for us, I have stickers for you after the panel. So please make sure to stop by and pick one up. You can see what they look like. He's got one on his. All right, we're here.
What she just said, I can kind of answer that a little bit because the current diametrically opposed superheroes teams that I can think of are Magneto and the X-Men, mm-hmm. Professor
yep.
Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
They are best friends. They each have different goals that they want to achieve in the world. They kind of want the same goal, which is, you know, for humans to survive and
right.
be accepted, but they have way different ways of going about it.
Yeah, their methodology is very
and so that's
opposed.
Kind of like the Easter Tales that you're
talking yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
That's just the best example.
That's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In the Fantastic Four books, they originally had Galactus as this universal evil thing, and he came to Earth trying to go ahead and eat the planet because he was just this evil bad guy. And they've recently, I think it's in the last 15, 20 years, they've reimagined him as kind of an elemental force of nature, where he doesn't particularly want to like kill people. But he needs to eat planets in order to survive. He's just a force in the universe. It's not because like he's not going after Earth because it's because he wants to see all humans dead. He's going in because it's a big source of sustenance for him. Retconned where he'll go ahead. He tried to go ahead and eat uninhabited worlds, but it just didn't. Didn't do it for him.
You didn't know. Save his appetite.
It sated his appetite for
low calories.
Exactly. Yeah. He was trying the gluten free diet. It didn't quite work out for him. So he needs to go pretty carb rich.
Yeah. In the red shirt.
I would love to know what each of you think about why this trend is happening to dirty up the hero.
Okay.
Where's that
coming
from?
Okay. You can go first.
I think it's kind of a way to make them more relatable. Like we somehow can't relate to a character who doesn't have like a tragic past. Just like it's part of like why are they all orphans or have step parents? They've lost someone. Like that somehow makes us like
relate to them
feel
more.
Closer to mm-hmm. them if they've suffered some loss.
But obviously the impeccable hero was hugely popular at one point
mm-hmm.
in history. So what's the trigger now? Why are we suddenly needing not impeccable heroes, but ones that are relatable in their like fallenness?
I think part of that has to do with like that the idea I had when I talked about why this was important and why we look at fairy tales. I talked about how much faster the world moves now, and how we know so much more news and we know so much more about what happens in the world. I think that they need to take on more of that we know. Because I think in the 1950s, you could have the heroes who were the bright, shining you know, perfect star, and they just stood for one thing. And we know that the world is no longer one thing. Like, when you watch, you know, kids that are growing up now, and like the way the world works is just so fundamentally different that you can't take that hero from that pristine world and have them work now. Because we just know, we know that the world's more complex. We know that things happen that we can't control in a way. I think that, not that they didn't know that. I mean, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman all came out of World War II, and it was devastating, you know, the impact it had on this country and on the world. So it's not that they didn't know it then, but I guess the abilities that you had to suspend your disbelief were stronger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and easier, like it was yeah. more natural. And we know now, we know, you know, the difference, that kind of realism, that reality has set in a way that I think forced the superheroes to be that way.
And it's kind yeah. of hard to live up to that, like the impeccable yeah, hero. Exactly. You can't live up to
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
you can't be that. Superman.
Nope.
But
well,
you
he's
can...
also an alien, so yeah. it helps. And, you know, you're really not gonna
disregarding
be Superman.
The whole yeah. being from another planet thing.
Right.
You can't live up to that. So I think we have to bring them down a little bit
to make them
to
more,
make them a little yeah. bit more human, even yeah. if you know they even aren't human.
Yeah.
Right, but that's what we wanted to do in that era. We wanted to, you know, we wanted to be the ideal.
It needed to be outside of who we were, and we want our heroes to be part of us now. And I think that's a huge shift in how we read characters. And I want Dante to finish, and I'm going to take the question in the back and then come back to you.
I guess. I mean, my
if you had, I didn't want to not.
My cynical answer is we can blame Christopher Nolan for this. don't get me wrong. I love those movies. They're great movies, except for the you know, 2/3 of the last one. The problem with it was that they're so wildly popular, and everybody related, you know, like to the I'm gritty, I'm angry, I'm always moping Batman. That Hollywood has latched onto that as like, okay, cool. So in order for superheroes to be successful, we need to go ahead and make them gritty and dark and moping and self-loathing and all of the fun stuff. You know, it's kind of a reason why shows like Daredevil and Jessica Jones have taken off in the way that they are. People just really seem to like them. Realistically, I think there has been a tonal shift ever since 9/11 where this may sound cliche, but like it seems like that was the moment at which America specifically, and perhaps the world at large, lost its innocence. Where we saw the absolute, some of the absolute worst that that humanity can do to each other. And I think it's at that point that idealism kind of died, symbolically died inside of our culture.
So you're just saying you think it was before then?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I saw, when I was reading comics, I saw the tonal shift about early 80s.
Oh yeah, no, and that's absolutely true. You've got stuff like the Miller run on Daredevil in there. You've got the Dark Knight Returns, Sin City, all published in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I want to make sure I get the questions that were hanging. So in the blue in the back, yes. Hasn't it already?
Yeah.
Got to the point where you can't tell who's good and who's bad. I mean, somebody brought up Game of Thrones. Like, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know who to root for anymore.
Absolutely.
The White Walkers.
Well, if you're rooting for the White Walkers, then that's a perfect example.
I know people who have said this.
Go ahead.
Maybe you have played the Injustice games. You know, Injustice is a very popular fighting game. If you follow the story mode, it follows Superman and Batman. Superman is trying to create a worldwide regime that is, you know, that takes over the world, rules over with an iron fist, and he's going to enforce peace, whether you like it or not. Whereas Batman is fighting for more of a personal freedom. Like, I mean, I feel like that kind of embodies, you know, kind of an answer to your question, like who's really right in that situation?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because at the end of the game, if you go with the Superman story, yeah, like yes, he gets world peace at the cost of everybody's freedom, and everybody's happy. There's no more crime. There's no more murder. It's very Minority Report. It's wonderful. And then if you go the Batman roots, I mean, you know, there's still crime. There's still murder, but everyone has their free will. I mean, like, is one really worse or better off than the other one? I'm not sure.
I kind of wonder, and I've thought about this because we've gone so like dark and dark and dark and dark to that point where I do think we have gotten to the point where it's hard to tell them apart sometimes. And I wonder if we're going to have like a fling back from that, where we're going to go back to wanting like the pristine and perfect heroes again. And that's going to be like, cause it's all, there's always culture and storytelling are always reactive. They're always coming in and out of what's being told. And so I do wonder if at some point we are going to want to come back to those heroes who were the pristine and the good and the like outstanding so that we could, you know, change what we see happening now. So, yeah.
You had a question over there?
Yes, I have to counter that. I was just wondering, because most of the majority of superhero movies are Disney-fied. So I'm just saying, if it's really, really dark, why is the majority of audience are going to see movies that doesn't depict the darkness where the original source could have been? It gives a sense. It's like in the 90s, there was a lot of rated R's, comic book movies, and now they have changed to PG-13 and PG to try to
get a broader audience.
So I'm saying if we're getting into a sense of we're wanting more dark material, how come the majority of basis people are looking for positive outlooks?
I mean, we might not be because, I mean, look at the two most successful superhero movies in recent memory, Deadpool and Logan. You know, like, they're extremely violent, extremely cynical.
But I'm talking
movies.
About compared to the big Marvel movies that, like...
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. I think it's easier for stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy to have that that wholly optimistic outlook because it doesn't take place on Earth. For the vast majority of the movies, it doesn't take place on Earth. I think it is easier for us to go ahead and suspend our disbelief of everything being terrible all the time because we're on planet Earth, or we can go to this mythical planet of Ego and everything can be sunshine and flowers and rainbows and things like that. I think at its core, Guardians of the Galaxy, people can accept it more as this fantasy superhero movie as opposed to folks who are on the ground like Batman and Wonder Woman, you know, everything is awful all the time.
Right. And I think out of all of the examples that we've covered, Guardians of the Galaxy is probably like the most fairy tale of them all. It is set in this, you know, fantasy world. It's the, like in the once upon a time.
Right. It was the one that inspired this entire presentation. So there would be, you know, the reason.
I mean, only that.
Yeah. The Seahawks jersey, and then you, sir.
I know this is about fairy tales, but I have to bring up Marvin the Longbrook from Vikings.
I'm sorry?
What character?
Marvin the Longbrook from Vikings.
From Vikings?
Kind of compared to Wonder Woman, because these are very divine shield.
Oh, very nice.
Cool. Yeah. I don't. No, that one, though.
Yeah, unfamiliar with that property.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Yeah, I'll check it out. I always take notes after these things, so I'm going to get you, and then, okay.
So you're talking about all of these, like, fantasy tropes in terms of superheroes. What would be the most interesting super villains do you think to do a similar thing here?
Oh, wow. That's a great question.
That's a fantastic question. I'm going to jump on what this person over here said. Magneto. X-Men was my first love at comic books. I've always really loved the Professor X and Magneto opposition, where we have Professor X obviously with the MLK, you know, peaceful opposition, whereas Magneto is very much the Malcolm X by any means. Maybe next time I do this presentation, I'll do Magneto with that.
Well, or we could do a whole one about villains.
You could do a whole one.
Yeah,
about
you know, we could do it and turn it on its head and do it about villains. And I'm trying to think of who is kind of coming to mind, and I'm having a really hard time. But I'm going back to because I mentioned Once Upon a Time earlier, the TV show, and one of the things I haven't finished. I had to stop watching it because as soon as they Elsified it, I was out. Like, I'm like, no. I mean, they could have done the Ice Princess and just done Hans Christian Andersen, and I would have been all in.
Yep.
But they didn't.
And I told you, they kind of went back and did that. But
only
they still
after
had frozen,
she showed up with the side braid and the blue dress. and I couldn't do it. But I loved how they treated Regina as the evil queen in Once Upon a Time. And I think in terms of the idea of our heroes and our villains getting kind of a little too close to each other, I think that that's a good example of exactly that, at least as far as I went in the series. And I haven't watched it at all, so I can put myself in a caveat there. So.
Okay, Marshall Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a more of an observation thing. There's also a lot of like fairy tale influence in another space epic that also starts out as like a Once Upon a Time in a galaxy far.
Yes. Yes. Star Wars. Yeah. Is that the Lord of the Rings you're talking about?
Yeah.
Just kidding. But yeah, Star Wars for sure.
Yeah.
The hero's tale, Vader, the villain. Java that can be like the monster, the dragon,
and stuff
like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. The rescue and the you know, the merry band of traveling adventurers that band together stronger. The space station talking animals. Yep. I mean, you know, you've definitely my knee-jerk reaction is to always go to Star Wars because it was my first fandom. Well, my second fandom. I guess my first fandom was technically the Muppets. That was my first Halloween costume. My first cosplay. No, just kidding. My first Halloween costume was Kermit, though. But yeah, but so I always want to, and so I try to stay away from Star Wars just because he really was riding with the hero's journey in mind. And so it's a little like shooting fish in a barrel. You know, to go to Star Wars. I think it's really interesting, though, if you do look at those tropes and you look at the recent trilogy that's coming out with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, where they know they're writing three movies and they've broken the hero's journey up into pieces. So they're carrying the hero's journey through the trilogy as opposed to trying to finish it all in one now, which I think is really interesting if you kind of dig into that. So I know you had another one. Yes.
I just wanted to kind of go off like what people were saying with and what you guys were saying with how they're like moving towards darker, like from the 50s.
Right.
I don't know. I would wonder and ask you guys, do you think that's because kind of the audience for, I feel like both fairy tales and comics has changed a little bit? Because mm-hmm. again, originally they were for adults and then they kind of
right.
became teaching and for kids and then they were Disney-fied.
Right.
And I feel like the same for, like, the audience that comics kind of were originally written for wasn't necessarily adults.
Right.
And maybe if yep. it had been focusing on adults, maybe a more complex story
yeah.
would have interested them. But if you're trying to teach kids about being, like, telling the
being
truth,
good, yeah.
being good,
yeah.
and you're using mm-hmm. superheroes to do that
yes.
the same way you would with Disney,
yeah.
maybe it's the shift, like, the nostalgia. You're mm-hmm. growing up, you and that's how you get a
yeah.
different world. And they are writing kids' comics now, Princess Nutmeg, a bunch of the people here, that they have that same, like, happy Disney shining story.
Sure.
Like, they may be slightly more complicated, but
mm-hmm.
would you say it's because there's been a shift in who is watching or who is...
Yeah, who the audience mm-hmm. is, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a shift from what it was, you know, the toss-away idea of comic books. I remember when we saw Stan Lee here last year and we
yeah.
saw him speak and he was like... You know, there were so many parents who didn't want their kids reading comic books until they're like, oh my God, my kid's reading.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, of course they're reading. Like, that's the point is, you know, and it is, you know, he was just like, well, why wouldn't you? And that was the idea that they were for kids and that they're not as much anymore, I think definitely has merit into why the complexities changed and all that as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, these characters have kind of grown up with their audience in the same way that Harry Potter did. I mean, look around at who's out here. The vast majority of us are here because we grew up with all of these fandoms as children, and we've you know
mm-hmm.
and we've grown up and we finally have the money so that we don't have to bug money.
So we can walk around a con like this and buy anything our heart desires.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
A lot of kids who are getting into this nowadays are not getting into it because they just kind of like discovered it in school. They're getting into it because we have parents who grew up looking at Captain America, looking at Batman, saying like, "Hey, I really want to go ahead and share this with you." You know, like I have friends who grew up with Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the same way, and they have, you know, 6-7 year old girls now, and they're just like, "I need you to go ahead and watch this. This is important." You know, You know, so
maybe don't show Buffy to your 6-year-old.
Yeah, might be a little.
Maybe not.
So. Yeah, 10. All right, we have about 5 minutes left. I'll go run another pair again.
Just to follow up on that, initially you were saying in the historicity of this, they were originally written for adults.
Yes.
Yeah.
They came for children.
Yeah.
What caused that shift back then?
I think it was that they realized that the power of the morality tale of using them as a means of telling kids how to behave, and they realized that they had these stories that had kind of floated around, and you have the Brothers Grimm who kind of collected the oral stories and then wrote them down, and then realized that we can't actually tell our kids that the ugly stepsisters cut their toes off and cut their heels off to shove their foot in the shoe. And that, this was actually the bloody reality of it, or that for Little Red Riding Hood actually kills the wolf. Like, we can't tell our kids this. So then but they could still tell the lessons. And so I think they got distilled down because they realized the lessons were fundamental, but they couldn't tell them the way that they were told then. So I think that's kind of how that will come about. Yeah.
Yeah, I have another question. I was just wondering about Eastern philosophy, like Eastern folk tales, how it compares to Western fairy tales. Is there any main difference between them, and has changed over the years? Because a lot of anime has come to the United States, so I was just curious what's your reaction and opinion upon anime and Eastern cultures like that.
The only anime everyone's going to crucify me for saying this. The only anime that I've really ever watched is Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, which are great cartoons, but I realize that they are not Eastern anime, so I'm going to pass on this question.
Yeah, you're actually hitting into two realms I'm not versed in. I've only watched a little bit of Korra, and I haven't watched any other anime, and I don't know Asian fairy tales enough to be able to speak. That's one of the things that I'm so sad about missing Jen, because she's a little bit more. I was more versed in the superheroes. She was more versed in the fairy tales and together. But yeah, so I'm not sure I can really help with that one.
Isabella, do you know anything?
I would love to.
No, you stumped me too, because while I know anime, I don't know Eastern mythology as much as I would like to say I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. You stumped the panel.
Yeah. here. First.
I'm not sure what's the answer to the gentleman's question, but something I say might relate because for the last 20 years and stuff, as I get older and I'm studying Buddhism, Taoism, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I've been a superhero kid and all that stuff since a kid. Mm-hmm. And so there's been some creative things. I'll just give one big example, keep it brief, that might perhaps answer the question. The first question, I came to late when I saw one of your favorite fairy tales. What I thought about it is actually The Wizard of Oz.
Right. That was one of my examples. you're right in there.
Right, I wasn't here.
Yeah.
So about 5 years ago, I just come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started piecing together that the principles of Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And so I started relating that Dorothy is the hero on the hero's journey.
Right. Dorothy's a perfect example of the hero's journey.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's all the principles and stuff of yin and yang that's in there, mm-hmm. but also the three trinity.
Right.
And so I thought about Taoism,
the heart,
about love, mm-hmm. power, and compassion.
Yeah.
Well, the lion represents the courage, the power.
Right.
The tin man, the intellect, wisdom.
And well, he's the heart.
The scarecrow
is the intellect.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Right. Yep. You got it. You're right there.
Right.
Yep.
So I started, and there's other stuff too, but I started piecing all that together. I think that if you take the principle of what I'm saying and start watching horror and Avatar and all, because I watch all that too, I think, in my strong opinion, you'll start to see some
the connections.
Stuff.
Okay.
Do I make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Sir, right
now. Yeah.
So actually, to direct that one, I know the one I'm most familiar with Eastern mythology is the Tale of the Monkey King, and
oh, yeah.
That literally with Sayuki, where that's one of the mainstream manga around early 2000s, and now it's going back as a remake. But most of us, actually, if we haven't watched Dragon Ball, we still you would still know you know, the Monkey King. Because it's almost the first iteration of Dragon Ball is, you know, literally the Monkey King come down as Super Saiyan. So it's really interesting how they have more literal parallels, it feels like. But...
Cool. That's well, I'm glad there were some people who knew because.
Yeah, thank you for bailing us out.
Yes. Thank you for making us look good.
The Monkey King that you just mentioned, yeah. You're talking about the same thing. That is from Hindu lore, Hindu mythology. You know,
yes, Hindi. Cool.
It's very
similar.
Yeah, the Chinese.
Yeah.
And you have that actually with Fushigi Yugi, which is another one back in the 90s.
What is that?
More of a shoujo. It's Fushigi Yugi, but it deals with the guardians of the palace, basically. So the north, south, east, and west. These the celestial guardians, sort of thing, where it's the dragon, the tiger, the tortoise, and then one more. I think it's the phoenix. But there's a direct. It's literally just taking up the adaptation and then making it more palatable for romance novel.
We're. Yeah, we're out of time. So I wanted to say thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Please check us out at thegeekembassy.com.
We have some stickers
if
you want to come.
If you'd like a sticker, please come to the front. We'll have stickers from the Geek Embassy. Have a great rest of your con, guys. Thank you.